You're listening to Screen Heroes.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Screen Heroes podcast. I am your host, Derek, and I have with me my two lovely longtime co-hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hey.
We are back. This week, we are talking The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Episode 3, Power Broker. And with our new format, we're just going to like dive right into it. We're going to go right into the nitty-gritty. So this is your spoiler warning for anything that's happened in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, anything that's happened in the MCU, all that kind of good stuff. You've been warned. There you have it. Real quick, before we get started, though, I just want to plug our Facebook group. If you enjoy the show and you like listening to us, come join the Screen Heroes podcast forum on Facebook. It's in our links. You can go to screen-heroes.com to find that. Join the group. We post news, memes, polls, spoiler threads, you name it. If it's entertainment focused, it's probably going to pop up in there. So you can come talk to us about cool stuff that we just can't talk to you about on the show.
Yeah, Rachel's been posting some good memes this week, so she's giving me a run for my money.
Yeah.
get in there and check those out.
I have purposely joined meme groups just to share shit in our group.
I like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dedication.
Yeah.
I'm good with it. So, all right, let's go. Let's dive in. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Episode 3. Where do you guys want to start?
Oh, my.
Oh, my, I mean, indeed. Okay.
There's so many places.
There are so many places.
Yeah, it is a little overwhelming based on just all the crazy things we get to talk about. I am liking each episode more than the previous one. Seeing Sharon Carter back, I was not too excited because I have thought she was a very boring character from her first introduction, but this is like the most interesting she has been. I like that they acknowledge the fact that she committed treason in order to help Captain America and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and because of it, she's been living in Madripoor now. That is a fictional country in Southeast Asia that has a very intense, I guess, division between the poor and the rich.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sharon Carter was awesome. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Her and Zemo were definitely the standouts of the episode for me.
Oh, for sure.
But we talked about last week asking if we were going to get a Prison Break episode. That was a little bold, I think. I think we're just all forgetting that this is only 6 episodes.
Yeah.
I would have been happy to get a full episode of that. But did it feel rushed for you guys at all? Like, kind of, this was too easy type of deal?
It definitely felt too easy. I'm definitely going to say that, like, even throughout the whole episode, like, a couple of things go wrong, right? But at the end of the day, it all felt really easy. The montage for the prison break, it felt very Ocean's 11, but, yeah, like, condensed.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing because that's not the focus. That's not really what matters here. They just wanted to get past it. But, you know, it was just very clean. It was a little too clean, I think. Like, I don't know. Like, why would Bucky understand the timing of this exact prison? That I didn't really buy. Like, I get that he understands how to start a fight psychologically, but it was just a little too perfect.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, they kind of had to cut some more corners to make that work within, you know, the confines of a 6-episode show, I think. It didn't really detract a lot for me from, like, the series as a whole, but
right.
I would have been really excited to watch, like, a Ocean's 11-type heist with all of them, you know, working together, even though, you know, Sam isn't going to be a part of it because there's no way he would condone that kind of thing. But yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he ends up on board with the plan, not after a lot of convincing.
Yeah, but would he be on board with the jailbreak? You know, I don't know.
I don't know.
I think it works better that Bucky just went ahead and did it.
I agree. Yeah.
That's fair. I mean, I think that that's fine. I mean, I do have questions about it, though. You know, like, how did Bucky get the card, the key card, into the book?
Yeah.
Yeah, that Zemo was reading. I'm not entirely sure how that took place. I'm also a little confused as to why there would be a key card reader inside the cell of such a dangerous prisoner. You would think he wouldn't be able to access the key reader from inside the cell.
Right.
Yeah, so there's a couple of, like, logistical things that, I mean, maybe it's a little nitpicky because, again, it's not the focus of the episode, but I feel like there were, if the goal was like, we just have to get Zemo out of jail, there's probably other ways to do it that would have been cleaner.
Probably. But I mean, it was just like a little 5-minute snippet of the whole episode. So
truth be told, I am super happy that they did it the way they did because of the fact that we got more Zemo in the prison and or outside of the prison. And he was just, you know, he was pretty phenomenal. Like, he was a lot of fun to watch and he was unexpected. And they gave us a better Zemo character in less than an hour than Civil War did in 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Civil War was split, you know, between 20 different characters.
Oh, my God.
So it's tough to compete with that. But, yeah, I mean, Zemo was by far the standout of the episode, like I said, with Sharon. But, yeah, I mean, it did raise a few questions, things that don't really line up with the Baron Zemo that we know from Civil War. And I think that's just going to be how it is, and we're just going to have to accept it. And that's fine. It's not... It's nothing that's like universe breaking or anything, but yeah, I mean, and seeing the mask come out was pretty cool, but I feel like it's just, that was like a one-off nod to comic fans and that he might not wear that anymore. But I guess we'll see. I hope he does.
I imagine he will. Cause it looks like just he wears it during fight sequences and maybe it ends up being bulletproof or something like that, you know, and that's why he wears it.
He wears it during fight sequences because that way they can put a stuntman in there.
Sure, of course.
Notice how he, like, fights and moves so differently when he's wearing the mask? Yeah.
Yeah,
it's not him anymore.
I can appreciate that, though. It's certainly a nice fix, and we don't have to worry about someone who looks clearly different.
Well, I mean, they wouldn't do that. They would just have the actor do it, and it would probably be much more poorly done. you know, Sharon, though, her fight scene was actually pretty great, even with the fact that it seemed like she was doing a lot of it herself and it wasn't a stunt person.
Right.
And it felt very, that whole scene and then the, you know, chase scene or the scene when they, like, kill the, I don't know, what was her name? The person that was, they were meeting in Madripoor and have to, you know, the bounty goes out to everybody in the whole city or whatever.
Selby.
Yeah, Selby. That was super John Wick. Like, everything about this episode felt very John Wick because John Wick people were involved in this episode. And they're involved in the whole series, but a lot of it was this episode.
Going back to that scene, so in the bar, right, and you've got, you know, Sam playing Smiling Tiger, and he's got to take that shot, and it's got, like, you know, snake venom or whatever in it, and like I love that so much because like I felt what he was going through in that moment of like he knows he has to take this shot, he doesn't have a choice, he's got to do it, but he really doesn't want to, and it takes a few tries, and I kept waiting for the bartender to like have a problem with how long it was taking, you know, and I'm sure that was on purpose, but I really enjoyed that scene. I thought it was really fun.
Yeah, Smiling Tiger, if I'm not mistaken, is a hero or a character in the comic books, not necessarily a hero, that is in the Thunderbolts, I think. Isn't that what they're called?
Yeah.
Rachel, you know much more than I do. And so isn't Zemo in that group also?
Yes.
So there's you know, a lot of theories, and I think you brought it up before, Rachel, too, that the Thunderbolts are going to be a part of this or, like, come out of this in the end. So this kind of lends some credence to that theory.
The existence and continued addition to the fact that there are villains that we are, I guess, like, just connecting with. Like, there are some super bad, evil guys out there that we're just not into. But there are also those, like, ghosts from Ant-Man and the Wasp that, you know, she's not really bad. But like she's
more
not,
gray characters.
Yeah. Leads me to believe that the Thunderbolts are coming down the pipeline. And Zemo is actually the leader of the Thunderbolts. So he could definitely continue outside of this pretty. So
maybe we'll get a whole Thunderbolts show announcement once, like, or a tease at the end of the show.
A show, a movie, something, yeah.
That would cool. be pretty crazy. I mean, I can't imagine that
Zemo's... The show would be better.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't imagine that Zemo's just going to be left walking around.
Well, they might not leave him walking around, but he's already had opportunities to escape. Yeah. So, I mean, who's to think that he won't get more of those? He had, like, four of them in this episode alone.
And, you know, we've seen with Hydra that they have people in the government. We don't know if there's somebody high enough to execute a pardon on his behalf.
I still think Wakanda is going to want him.
Well, I mean, the end of this episode kind of proves that that is 100% true, but that doesn't mean that they'll get him.
Yeah, not everybody always gets what they want, Derek.
I agree. I guess my point is doing a show like that while Wakanda is chasing him. I don't know if that would really work out that well. But
okay,
whatever.
Well, there's just also the thought. Wakanda show
right.
that's coming up as well. So that could also be connected in some way.
True. Very true. So, yeah, so they get their bounty on their heads for everyone thinking that they killed that one woman.
Selby.
Thank you. And man, everybody in Madripoor is a horrible shot.
Really bad. Thank God for that, or there wouldn't be much of a show.
I was not expecting that to be said.
Derek, I know you played Cyberpunk. Did this city not give you Night City vibes
very
big
much.
Time?
Oh,
very,
it is such a
cyberpunk yeah.
town.
Yeah,
no, and I like love it. I always feel a little weird when cyberpunk towns are always Asian towns, but then it's not, you know, I brush that off because it's not always that. It's, you know, New York has been painted like that, and it's just because of the anime, there's been a lot of Asian influence in a cyberpunk. As well as, you know, just the fact that Tokyo itself and Hong Kong kind of feel like cyberpunk cities by themselves.
I think Blade Runner has a lot to do with that, too. Blade Runner kind of put cyberpunk on, like, the mainstream map in the United States. So a lot of people, that's their first thought, is what we got in Blade Runner. But in this one, like, this Madripoor reminded me a lot of the video game cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Because... in the video game, there's, like, all, you know, these different districts that are, you know, they're stylized fairly differently. You've got different types of building structures and different kinds of people live there that do different things. This felt very much like that because you kind of, on a smaller scale, because you kind of had, like, the uptown and the downtown.
Yeah.
Lots of high rises that are designed very similar. Mm-hmm. The way the lighting is done is extremely similar. Yeah. I want to see more Madripoor in the MCU, even if it's not in the show. It's probably the one, other than Wakanda, probably one of the most intriguing, like, locales we've seen. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because they get the opportunity to be creative with the way these are designed, because they're not real cities, they're real countries, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I want to see more. I would watch a whole series just about the city.
And Madripoor,
is it a city or is it a country?
No, it's a city.
Okay.
I mean, one of the good things, so you know, in Marvel, most of the cities are real, right? You know, Spider-Man's in New York and everything like that. They don't get a chance to do this often, and they're really good at it. You know, the two times that they've really been able to do it, they're great. And so, yeah, I hope we get to see more of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So, I'm embarrassed at times because I'm not, like, since I'm not actively in school, I forget a lot of my geography lessons. And so there have been some times in Marvel or DC movies where they mention a fictional place or a real place. And I'm like, okay, wait, is it real? Is it fake? So...
Yeah, I don't think that's anything to be embarrassed about it. I don't know geography of my own country, let alone the whole world. So, you know. Anyway, getting back to the topic at hand, I actually think Sharon Carter is going to be working for the power broker.
I think she is the power broker.
No, no way.
I love both of those theories because, again, it makes her 10 times more interesting than useless love interest in Winter Soldier and... you know, kind of helpful country trader, you know. So either way, I think it would be great if she was a part of that.
I definitely think after this episode, especially, you know, when she gets picked up at the end of her bit for this, I think she is the power broker. She talks a lot about how she was not dusted, that, you know, she was around for those 5 years and had to figure out what to do. And she's clearly gained a lot of skills. We don't get to see a lot of her in Winter Soldier to know what kind of fighter she is, but she is a very good fighter now. She's clearly got a lot of money. She's got a ton of protection. She's great with a rifle. And so I think that she's worked her way up, and she already knew about the super soldier serum because of Steve. She knew about that whole project. She would have had more knowledge on it.
Well, also because of her... aunt.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just feel like she would have been in the know more than a lot of external people anyway. And you combine all of that together, and I think, you know, she didn't intend for her scientist to get killed, but I think she's definitely using Sam and Bucky to try and get her stuff back.
Do you think Aunt Peggy would approve of what's happening right now?
What Sharon's doing?
Yeah.
No. I don't.
I think Aunt Peggy's banging.
That's a weird thing. Now, Ryan, you think that she's not the power broker, but she's working for the power broker.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
I think that, I mean, there's that phone call that she gets on the way to the her ride out from the docks or whatever that was. I don't think that what she was saying is something that the power broker would be saying. It sounded more like she was reporting to somebody. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think she's working for the power broker. I would be okay with it if she was, but it seems a little rushed to, you know, make this already established character into the power broker.
It would certainly be rushed for what we've seen on screen, but with the time jump, they can kind of do whatever they want.
I mean, it would be rushed for just a random new actor to show up playing the power broker too, but it's just kind of a weird jump of character. And why would she want to be like allowed to come back into the United States, you know, and get pardoned for all her shit if she was the power broker and like had built this entire thing up in this other city?
I don't think she does. I think she was just using that as a plausible excuse to make a deal with Sam and Bucky. She's really just using them. I don't think she really has that interest.
Gotcha.
Now chat's interesting. So chat thinks that, well, two things. So let's start with the first one. The first one is that the power broker is Thunderbolt Ross. What do you think of that?
That'd be okay. Dun, dun,
dun.
Right?
Yeah, I kind of okay like that too.
But he's so old though.
Yeah.
So.
And honestly, I think I'm still holding out on the fact that he could be Red Hulk eventually, especially in the She-Hulk show.
Well, there you go. He's the power broker, but like Ryan said, he's kind of old. So he takes a new serum that's supposed to help, you know, lengthen his life. And that's how he becomes Red Hulk.
No, the power broker is like top dollar drug dealer. Like he's not taking his own stuff or anything else that's super experimental. No.
They could take it a different direction.
No.
Their own supply, Derek. That's rule number one.
Come on.
I am curious though, Ryan, why do you think Thunderbolt Ross is too old to be the Power Broker?
I don't know if he's too old. He's just not very, you know, the Power Broker is supposed to be threatening. You know, he's like this power guy that holds power over this whole city.
Old white men are not threatening. They don't control anything.
Listen, just because they control things doesn't make them threatening. I'm not scared of most of the old white men that control things. Like, you know, you're in a place of mercenaries and bounty hunters, and these are bad people. This is not the United States of America. This is a place where these are people that are actually doing like crimes, not like, you know, manipulating the stock market. Like, they're going out and killing people and fucking people up. So it has to be somebody that is intimidating, right? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe it's just his like peons that are intimidating, and he just runs the show. He's got all these lackeys that are, you know, there to scare people. But I don't know. It would be cool. I'd be cool. Okay with it. I think it would be cool, but I don't know that he's like scary enough to really pull off Power Broker. We'll see though. Maybe I'm wrong.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Now the other theory in chat is that Sharon is just a double agent for, you know, the CIA or some other, you know, organization. And I mean, I think that that's somewhat likely. At this point, the only reason I would think that wouldn't be the case is there's nothing really in it for her to go and find the serums if her whole job is to get to the Power Broker, right? Like, why put herself on the line for the serum if she's supposed to be watching the Power Broker? And if she's already working for the Power Broker, then getting involved with Sam and Bucky is just a really bad way to blow her cover.
Right.
Plus the double agent shit is getting a little tired in the Marvel universe at this point, at least for me. I mean, I'm not saying that that's not possible. It's entirely possible. I mean, and maybe they can play it off really well, but we've just seen so much shit with people saying they're one thing and then they're another thing, and it's supposed to be some big reveal. And it's like, I mean, just look at Quicksilver in WandaVision, right? That wasn't really them. That was more the fans that made that a thing. But that's just another example of them doing that. And there's countless other ones in all the movies. And I mean, the entirety of Hydra pretending to be S.H.I.E.L.D., you know.
Right. Yeah. I don't think it's fair to put the Quicksilver thing on the fans, because the writers did that very well, and the cast of people did that very on purpose.
And even the people that wrote it, wrote the captions that wrote Fox's Quicksilver, you know, when he first shows up.
Yeah, so that's, I don't think that's on the fans. I think that was, we did what they wanted us to do. We didn't just make something up.
It's true.
But anyway, so that's where we are. I guess those are our theories. If you have any of your own theories about who the Power Broker is, you know, before we find out, for all we know, we find out in episode 4. So, you know, you have until then, let us know, right? You can comment on any of our posts. You can, you know, join our group or hit us up on Facebook at the Screen Heroes Podcast, or I'm just going to plug this one more time. You can leave us a voicemail, 913-890-3007.
You
leave
know what?
Your comment.
If you do that, we'll actually play it.
Yeah.
We won't just like address it in what you say. We'll actually just play it on the show.
As long as it's not like deeply offensive.
Even if it is deeply offensive.
No, there are things I am not going to allow be said on this show. But if you have a legitimate question or comment or theory about the MCU here, let us know and we will plug that into the episode and then we will discuss it. So there you go.
There was some stuff in this episode that, you know, I don't know if you guys remember the rumors that they had to cut a plot line out of this show due to COVID. Like the rumor was that there was a plot line that was very similar to like what's happening in the world with COVID. And that, so they had to cut it out because of the release time of the show. And there were some hints in this episode. There were some hints in this episode that definitely is a thing. And in the previous episodes, when you kind of put things together, like in episode, I think it was episode 2, when Bucky first meets the Flag Smasher girl. And he's talking about the vaccines in the back of the truck. And then in this episode, you see what's her name? I want to use her actual name, but the girl that is like the leader of the Flag Smashers.
Oh, Carly
Morgenthau.
She goes and visits her mom. And her mom is actually like not just an extra. Like this actress, if you look it up, she's actually like done a lot of work. And so she was clearly brought on for more than this role that she was given. And her speech Carly's speech or like her talking during this, that part of the episode, like her mouth was entirely covered and it sounded different. And there were several spots where you could tell the audio was like different. Yeah, it was that one. And then there was one where in the lab with Sharon, where they cut, there was a really awkward cut and like you could hear the way the echo changed a little bit in her voice. And it was on the back of her head instead of her face, the camera was. And there was a few cuts like that that make me think that that's definitely, there was some credence to that. Because her mom definitely has a disease of some kind. And even the guy, the scientist in that lab, he has a line too where it sounds like it was ADR'd in, where they changed the disease to like tuberculosis or something like that. It cut off of his face for that line, even though the rest of the line was, or the rest of what he was saying was up in his face. So yeah, I just thought that was interesting that it seems like there was definitely a plot line that had to be cut because it was too similar to real life.
That is interesting. I mean, they definitely had filming issues anyway, because they had several delays. They had to stop filming a couple of different times. And so I didn't know they were changing any of the story because of that, but it was
probably
surprising.
A secondary storyline. I'm sure it was not something that was super relevant, like to the overall storyline.
Right.
That's a good point. You want to take a break?
Oh, sure. Yeah. We can go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, I think we should start talking about Carly Morgenthau and all of them. Sound good?
I'm good with it.
All right. And that's what we're going to do. We will be right back. Okay, we are back. Let's do this. So let's talk Carly Morgenthau and their whole thing. So up until this point, you know, they're clearly antagonists, but to a degree they've been sympathetic, right? They're the ones who were around during those 5 years. They liked that the borders had come down and the world had come together and, you know, just tried to help everybody. And now things are going back, the walls are coming up, people are being displaced, you know, people don't have
jobs.
Well,
the episode starts with a commercial for reintegrating the worlds, getting it back
or that commercial felt very WandaVision.
It did.
It was weird. It didn't fit the tone of this show. It's not that I didn't dislike it necessarily, but I felt like it didn't fit the tone of what we have in this show. Like it worked really well in WandaVision, but because it's like it's episode 3 and it's the first one, it just felt a little jarring.
Yeah, it was a little weird, but I mean, it felt like a very real commercial that you could see on TV today. That's probably the most disturbing part of it, you know?
Yeah, I think like for it to have worked a little better for me, it would have been just as simple as like just pulling back from a TV or something like that, that like a character is watching the commercial. You know, you've seen TV shows and movies do that before, rather than it being like the commercials for the audience, the commercials actually for the characters.
Right.
I think that would have made it feel a little more natural, at least for me.
Maybe. It didn't bother me enough to like, I don't know. It didn't screw up the whole episode feel or anything for me.
No.
In the beginning, it would have been better at the beginning or the very end, like they did it, because it would have, I think, interrupted the flow of the episode anywhere else. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
So what'd you think of that concept, like this organization that's, you know, reintegrating the ones, the missing or what, however they're termed.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Oh, I was just going to say that commercial comes off as disingenuous to me. So this group, while it sounds like, you know, just about anything else in America, where on the surface it has such a pleasant, wonderful sounding mission and name, but you dig a little deeper and it's, you know, a little nefarious. And, you know, that's kind of how it was. They may be helping people, but they're also stockpiling resources that can go to people who don't have any. So I want to know more about it, but my initial judgment isn't good.
Right. And you're definitely not supposed to feel good about them.
Right.
I'm pretty sure. Like, you know, right after that commercial, they immediately smash cut to like police force with their logo on the side, with John Walker Cap going, mm-hmm. you know, busting into a building and saying, don't even let them breathe, which is really relevant right now with the trial that's going on and the things that have happened in this country in the past year. And maybe they didn't think I wouldn't have thought they would put that line in the show. But they couldn't have known some of the things that were going to happen. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. It's incredibly, you know, it's disheartening because of how realistic it is. You know, what is a relief group need with
a police force,
right?
And Captain America
with combat gear and yeah. You know, giant bulletproof shields and no.
Well, here to your point, Ryan, about Captain America, I think it would have worked with Steve because Steve would have legitimately been there to help,
just like the World War propaganda that he did, right? Like, you know, he's trying to raise money for, you know, war bonds and things like that. And he did great with that. You know, it is, I think, kinda, he has a purpose for sure.
It is kind of fun how they're showing the two different sides to it. You know, both of the captains started out by being a symbol as for propaganda, pro-America kind of stuff. And in the 1940s, it's all, yay, America, this is so exciting. And now it's like, oh, this doesn't feel right. So
yeah, it does not feel good.
Mm-mm. Well, there is a big difference because, you know, Steve's cap was put against, you know, the Nazis and Hydra, and, you know, history has shown how, you know, the Nazis are used as the bad guys in a lot of fiction over the years. Right. It's kind of, that's an easy one to throw out there. That's usually not controversial to put those guys as the bad guys. Whereas new Cap, you know, Russell Cap, we've already seen him be a jerk. We've already seen him bend and even break codes that we would not want Captain America to cross. And this episode's no different, right? He's overly aggressive. He's rude. He's insulting. And he's got this entire massive elite force behind him at the same time, which just makes it even harder. Cause that one dude, good or bad, the guts that guy has to say, you know, what he did to Cap when he knows that anybody could just put a bullet in his head, dude's got guts.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah. And seeing him get spit in the face, you know, and I knew that was going to send him into a rage. I thought that was great. So I think we're definitely seeing some of the things that are going to lead us to see US Agent versus Cap. I wouldn't be surprised if his costume changes from blue to black by the end of the series.
Interesting.
Yep. I agree.
See, I don't know. Part of me thinks they might steer just really hard into this whole concept and even make them brighter red, white, and blue because, you know, to kind of show that point of he doesn't see himself as the villain. And a lot of people don't see him as the villain, even though he really is.
Right. Well, in the comics, it wasn't really his choice. The government took that title away from him. Sure. And, you know, after I think he brutally murdered somebody or something along those lines. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they did the same thing in the show.
Gotcha.
In the comics, the US government is also not as corrupt as it is in real life.
That's true. We don't really know the state of the government in the MCU at this point, given that, you know, it was completely infiltrated by Hydra at one point, and then you have the blip. So we don't really know how stable it is or who's really in charge. We don't know
We haven't really seen a president since Iron Man 3, to be completely honest.
It's a little weird that, like, after going through the blip, we still don't, like, we didn't really get to see world leaders in any real capacity. You know, like, Civil War was the last time we saw any world leaders.
We were so focused on which heroes were dusted that, you know, we didn't even really think about which world leaders were.
Yeah,
true.
And so it's also, again, it's been 5 years. So we have no idea who's in charge or what the government looks like. And it could be a total mess. It could be a disaster. It could be one of those things where things look nice and it's just a coat of paint, but everything's, you know, falling apart underneath.
Sure.
Yeah, it could definitely be that.
So while Carly Morgenthau is stealing and killing, you know, people, it also could just be a lot worse than what we know.
Mm-hmm. Well, so she, you know, again, going back to a little bit earlier, and we were talking about like her people were kind of sympathetic in the first two episodes. You felt for them. You might not agree with their methods, of course, but you felt for, you know, where they were coming from. And now, like, she blows up a building with people inside, yeah, some of whom appeared to be civilians, but I could be wrong.
No, that, I think you're right.
And then I think that totally pushes her over to the other side. And, you know, yeah, her colleague or whatever didn't know that was going to happen, but he doesn't seem like super upset about it yet. And maybe that's coming later, but
I thought he looked genuinely scared of what Carly was capable of, as well as just in fear for his own life. And so he was just kind of like stunned.
Interesting.
But yeah. I think, you know, they're going to develop that relationship just a little bit more.
Yeah, so what and they have all of the Power Broker serum at this point, right? Isn't that what they, well, that's what they implied. It looked like there was like an emphasis put on some of the vials in the lab when it caught on fire. So I'm wondering if maybe Baron Zemo grabbed something, some vials, yeah, on the way out, and maybe that's how John Walker is going to get it. From a deal with Zemo or something like that.
I thought the scientist said that they had stolen everything.
He did, but I mean, that doesn't mean he didn't have like some untested or like early or, you know, earlier versions that were maybe not as refined or something like that still there. And that could highlight the fact that, you know, John Walker's an asshole. And so now he's more of an asshole, because they said with the original super soldier serum, it highlighted your, you know, right, what you are. And he right, said that he had, fixed that basically and made it a more perfect formula. So maybe one of the older formulas, because there was a shot that didn't need to be there showing like vials of a liquid.
That's fair. So going back to him, the scientist talking about how he's changed the formula, I really liked that bit of exposition because it helps right away why these flag smashers
are so tiny.
Yeah, they're regular people, you know, and Carly Morgenthau, for example, is just, she's a normal looking person, but she's got this super strength. It's a nice, it's not a throwaway line, I don't want to say that, but it's a nice bit of exposition that solves that question.
Yeah,
that was smart.
I agree. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I agree too. Sorry, for people that are listening and you hear dog noises and stuff, we just adopted a dog and I have been trying to keep an eye on them with our other dog, and so you hear a lot of dog noises in the background, so I'm sorry about that, and I have to keep muting myself because of it.
So now so chat's suggesting that those other vials that we were seeing, that's what ends up becoming the Red Hulk formula. That
definitely could be. I mean, you know, when you have a random scientist that's developing things that modify humans, that's an easy like storytelling method to pull out anything like that. I mean, maybe they didn't even have that in mind, but they could, you know, during the She-Hulk series, pull that out and be like, oh, that we stole this from the scientist, you know, or Zemo got this from the scientist in Madripoor. Yeah. And yeah. So
everyone who didn't watch this is going to be like, what's Madripoor? And we're going to be like, oh,
exactly. Basically how the entire MCU goes.
Right. Yeah.
For people that haven't watched everything.
If you don't watch something, you end up missing it, but you know, hopefully it doesn't ruin the entire thing for you.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So let's see. So Zemo himself, you know, Ryan mentioned that he had a few opportunities to escape, but he doesn't. And I gotta be honest, at least the time when they're with all the shipping containers, I legit thought he was gonna be gone. Did you think he was gonna be back? Did you think he was really leaving? Because I did.
Well, I think his whole purpose in the MCU right now, or at least is set up by this episode, is to get rid of superpowered individuals.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they make that pretty clear. So Falcon Winter Soldier are the best leads that he has to finding the flag smashers that have taken this formula currently have all of the super soldier serum that's known to exist. So I think that's why he's not really running away. And I didn't really expect him to run away because they've made it clear that that's his intention. You know what I mean? Once he's used them to the end of what he intends to do, or like to further his means as far as he can go, then he'll leave.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair. I guess I just kind of assumed with the scientist dead, knowing that the serum's not there and knowing that he's the one with the airplane, that yeah, he might be just as fine on his own at this point.
Three heads are better than one.
I guess. Yeah.
I guess. But so. I wouldn't, you know, maybe he might end up leaving and going to, like I mentioned, John Walker getting the formula from him, you know, potentially that might be how, you know, maybe he leaves them because they're not doing enough work and finding things fast enough. And so he goes to this other team that's also looking for the same people and works with them instead. You know, he's the kind of guy that will do that kind of stuff.
Yeah. That's fair. Ray, any other thoughts on that?
No, not really. Zemo was, you know, he's a villain. He's out for himself. And right now his goals align with Bucky and Sam. So that's why he's like on our side for right now.
Oh, but also the goals align with John Walker and Battlestar. And
absolutely.
Those people. So yeah, he could easily go either way.
It's... Yeah. Everything's going to come to a head eventually.
Well, and he may even see an advantage to working with Russell, because if he works with Captain America and helps the U.S. government track down these terrorists, maybe, you know, they'll help him out from a legal standpoint and he can just be scot-free like, you know, Ray mentioned earlier in the episode.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's entirely possible.
Right. Like, it's not that he can't escape. It's not that he can't continue to run. But why would you want to? Right. If you could avoid it, if you could just end up being free, maybe that's what you try and do. And he could hide, you know, in the U.S. or something.
Yeah. If someone's going to give you amnesty, why not take it?
Right.
So I could see him, you know, flip flopping back and forth to just about any side, whatever is going to work for him.
For sure.
Now, at the tail end of the episode, we get the reintroduction of Wakanda with Ayo. What do you think that's all about?
Well, first of all, I love the way it popped up. I love that Bucky just notices something different in the way everything looks. And then we see these like little balls and we're not entirely sure what they are. This is the first time that they've really been up front. And then we see Ayo in the alley and she's immediately like, I've come for Zemo. Like, it was a really fun way to bring her into this. It was a cool entrance.
Yeah,
I saw your dog, Ryan. It's cute.
Yeah, if you watch the corner of the screen, you can occasionally see dog ears pop up because she has huge ears. But yeah, I mean, what I liked about this ending was that it wasn't like WandaVision, where like every ending you're like, oh my gosh, we got to talk about for the next, you know, 7 days what's going to happen.
What does it mean?
Yeah, it was very clear what's going to happen. It's a cool character to see. It's something that's not necessarily in theme with the rest of the show. I mean, you're not, Wakanda is a very different theme, but it's important to the story here. So, but we're not really going to speculate on what's happening that much probably, because it's pretty clear what they want, you know?
I just love that every character we have here has their own motivations, and easily they could be one or another. They could be corrupted. They could be gray. They could be completely pure and genuine. So we're coming for really cool showdowns. Like, that's what they're building up to. Just some fun, awesome fight scenes and really well choreographed dialogue. And it's all just going to be pretty interesting when it comes to a head.
And that's what I'm here for.
Right?
Like all this other stuff is cool. But I'm here for the well choreographed fight scenes. You know, like that's what I want to see. Superheroes fighting.
That's what Ryan's about.
Yeah. Anything else? WandaVision was great. Don't get me wrong. But I mean, this is what Marvel is for me.
That's fair. But like, I mean, come on. Like, Bucky was the White Wolf. He spent 2 years in Wakanda. He knew that this was going to happen, right? This was part of his plan.
It's very possible. He knew. Yeah.
right? Like my thought process is he did this knowing that somebody, maybe he didn't know AO specifically, but he knew somebody from Wakanda was going to show up and that would be kind of like his backup in case things went sideways.
Potentially. Yeah. I mean, do you guys have, they brought up the White Wolf moniker already in the show. Do you think that they're going to like explore that further? Like make him an actual, obviously he's going to, we talked about this a little bit. You know, do you think he's going to stay the Winter Soldier, or are they going to like translate him into another title, but still playing the role of kind of.
So I think he's still the White Wolf. I think that he's been working for Wakanda this entire time since coming back, since Endgame. He's been continuing to work for Wakanda because, you know, he did spend a lot of time there, and they made it very clear that he was always welcome there. And you know, this list going through the amends and everything is important to him on a personal level, but he could hide away in Wakanda forever if he wanted to. And I think the only reason he's not is because he is on a mission for Wakanda. And maybe the Zemo thing wasn't part of that. I don't think that was necessarily part of the plan, but I think he's definitely still the White Wolf. And that's why they keep tabs on him, which is why he knew that he would have some Wakanda backup if he did break out Zemo.
Yeah, I mean, I would be totally on board if that's the way it went. So fingers crossed. I hadn't actually thought about that point that maybe he's been working for Wakanda this whole time, but I would love that if that came to be the thing.
I agree. I'm on board with that.
Woo. You guys liked my idea. You guys never liked my idea.
First time in 250 episodes.
Anyway.
Mark this down. Momentous occasion.
Mark it, dude. What else we got on this one? Anything else in this episode you think is worth discussing?
I think we covered pretty much everything.
I think so. Well, we have a little bit of time. Do you guys want to talk about the Loki trailer or anything like that to kind of tack on something here at the end?
Loki trailer looks good. I'm having a lot of fun little feelings about that one pop up. It's going to be really interesting. Again, we're crossing into territory that Marvel has never touched before with like the constant time travel. So that'll be a lot of fun. And Tom Hiddleston just sells Loki to us like no other person could. I really wouldn't want anybody else in the role at this point.
Yeah, honestly, I watched the trailer, but, you know, I was kind of in the corner at work trying to hide and not get caught. So I didn't get to spend a lot of time doing an in-depth dive into it or anything. But from what I saw, it looked like it was going to be cool. I'm definitely excited about it. Owen Wilson actually looks like he's in an enjoyable role. Yeah. So that's a first time for everything, I guess.
I like Owen Wilson. Most of his films are not really for me, but I like him. And so I'm looking forward to seeing him in something that I'm excited about. There were some fun moments in the trailer though. Like there's the scene where Loki has to sign off on a document that's literally everything he's ever said. And then he replies and it prints off another piece of paper and he's like, sign this too. It just really made me laugh. Cause you know, Loki is a loquacious fellow. And so that's gotta be a pretty thick file, you know?
Well, it was a very thick file, yeah. We saw. Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to that. And I am a sucker for time travel, multiverse type stuff. I love alternate realities and I'm really looking forward to them playing around with all of that.
Then you also love to complain about things that don't make sense. So
time travel never makes sense in anything. Some get it slightly better than others. No, I think you can sit there and find holes in every time travel thing ever.
Well, we'll have to have a conversation about that at some point then. But, you know, look, some time travel stuff is tighter than others. I think
that's, I said that.
Endgame does an okay job at it, but they made it a little more convoluted than it needs to be. But I'm looking forward to this. I still enjoyed all the time travel in Endgame. It doesn't hurt my enjoyment of the film or anything like that.
No, me either.
You know, so I'm looking forward to it. But I mean, I guess that's about it then. So next week, we'll be talking about episode 4 of the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So be sure to join us for that. Remember, we do this live on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. So thank you to everybody who joined us in chat this week. We appreciate your thoughts, your suggestions, your theories, all that kind of good stuff. You can join us next time for that. You can find us at screen-heroes.com. It's got all of our links. You can listen to our show on pretty much every podcast platform you can possibly imagine. Leave us a review. A lot of them allow reviews, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, for example. We'll read your review live on the show, good or bad, as long as it's not deeply offensive. We will read it on the show. So drop us a review. We would really appreciate that. And like we said, join our group. You can find me on Twitter at the Star Trek Dude. Ray, where can people find you?
I'm at Siren Ray, guys.
And Ryan, where can people find you?
At Buster Props.
At Buster Props. There you have it. We are Screen Heroes. Find us at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter. Screen-heroes.com, like I said. We'll catch you guys next week. Thanks for joining us.